pencil in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello everyone and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 251 and we're gonna get the job done. It's your host Ify Wadi waiting in the booth with me, all my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, named by one of my like followers who saw a pic of us together as George Lucas for some reason.
If I had a nickel.
Look, but we know for sure it's America's favorite critic, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Oh, I'll tell you what's good, Ify. Cookies that you are not made available in America for some reason. I don't understand what this is about. I had a nice day out on Saturday. I finally got to go to the Academy Museum, which is gorgeous. And afterwards, went with some friends to have lunch at the farmer's market and got to go to Monsieur Marcel, my favorite little like foreign things store. And they had cookies that were amazing that are not like they should be in every shelf in America. I don't know what this is about. They had these Nutella, what they call Nutella biscuits, these little shortbread cookies stuffed with Nutella. And then also Petite Maman, you know, who makes the really good jelly that comes in the thing with the gingham lid, and you can make the jar into a nice jelly glass afterwards. Bon Maman, sorry, Petite Maman,
the movie. Is it Petite Maman, the Shyama film?
The movie that we never shut up about this show. Yeah, sorry, Bon Maman. Anyway, Bon Maman makes cookies also. And so you can get these little like lemon or raspberry little tartlets. And I'm like, why? How is this not at my Gelson's? Why do I have to go to the import store for the good shit? So clearly, America is, there's a cookie gap. We are falling behind in the best cookies. And we need to write your congressman and find out why the Nutella biscuit is not a more mainstream food stuff here, because it will rock your world.
I want to think it's because they're all like pending FDA approval.
There you go.
Like they just got the good stuff, so they can't just put them on a shelf.
You have to cross the border and get it somewhere.
Yeah.
We got to figure it out, because I remember one time I got like really into clotted cream and scones.
Yes.
And I ordered it online and made it myself. So we can make it happen if we really want to.
USA.
Yes, USA. And now, you know, someone who I've learned the deepness of this statement and made me rethink using it and makes me only want to say it more, the Queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark. What's good?
If he sent me a tweet that someone had done saying, Midwesterners will hunt you down if you claim to be Midwestern and you have moved out of the Midwest. Well, they wouldn't hunt you down as much as passive aggressively discuss you with their friends. But yeah, same end game. What is good with me that you gents can see, this gal who perhaps came of age in the 90s, and therefore plucked the living hell out of her eyebrows, has invested in an eyebrow serum. You guys know I've been using a lash serum for years, and I have the lashes of a Disney prince. But my eyebrows are coming in strong. This is going to be hot eyebrow summer for Ms. Andrea Diane Clark.
Drea, dearest.
Yeah, right? Like, no more wire hangers, mister. These eyebrows mean business. I'm really psyched about it.
They
did
not come to play.
No.
These eyebrows.
I mean, like, they're growing in. They're denser, like, bigger, faster, stronger. But they're also, like, darker. They're legit.
It's a thicket, one might say, of eyebrow.
Well, I hope that's how people describe things on my face, Alonzo.
Yeah, well, you know, Drea, she got that thick face with the thick brows.
I'm reading this whole thing. I don't feel good about any of this.
It's all working.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, no.
Well, you know who can make you feel good? Well, it's none other than Stephen Ray Morris, podcast producer extraordinaire, including shows like My Favorite Murder, and especially pertinent to today's conversation, See Jurassic Right. What's good?
Yeah. Yay!
Oh, man. Woo! Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I also, I feel like I was self-conscious about my eyebrows growing up, and then I was like, wait, I just have Jennifer Connelly's eyebrows, so I'm feeling good.
There you go.
That's the dream right there.
Just assign it to an actor that you really like, and then it works out. But yeah, good. I'm good. I'm wearing a snake for the people at home that can't see, because sometimes you just got to treat yourself to something you've always wanted as a kid, and you see those snakes hanging at the zoos or at museums, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to get it, because it's our time, you know.
You can also lay them in the doorway in case you have a draft, you know.
Oh, of course, yeah. No, it makes them perfect.
Look, he found the adult purpose for his child toy.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
Could scare the neighbors.
Middle-aged man.
George Lucas could never. Iffy, what's good with you?
Well, what's good with me? Well, what's good with me is, you know, coming up from, I had to spend the fun night in San Diego this weekend. I did a show out there, decided to make a trip of it on the way down. I was going through my high school hits, lots of screamo, lots of metal. And that's why there's like a little scratchiness. You know, we're almost back. We're like, I'd say 75%. I don't know why I got sounded Southern when I said it, 75%. We're almost back to full capacity over here and if he's vocal cords. But it was a good time. It was a good weekend. It was Juneteenth. Someone PayPal'd me $50 for Juneteenth, so shout out to that person. Keep it coming, you know. Let's make Juneteenth year round and always send me money.
I'm sad, yes. It wasn't me. But you know what? There'll be another Juneteenth.
Well,
next
you know,
year.
You've paid your reparations through skincare tips. we worked out a situation.
more gift holidays, I say.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, from the Christmas Daddy himself. But if you're a fan of dinosaurs, it was a holiday for you, and we're talking and walking with the dinosaurs as we tackle Jurassic World Dominion, and later. We'll stick some terrible lizards into some classic films. But first, it's time for IDIC, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? It's our movie news segment where we go into the week's movie news and decide as a group if it's important and if we care. Sometimes we even ask the question. First up, Guy Ritchie will direct a live-action Hercules. Look, when you hear Ritchie's name, maybe you think of movies like Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. But the biggest moneymaker of his career was the 2019 live-action Aladdin. And now he's back for more animation adaptation action, taking on the much-loved 1997 musical Hercules and giving it the non-drawn treatment. We don't have a release date yet, but we do have a question. Is this important? Do you care?
Is it beloved? Do people below?
Oh yeah, the millennials, we Hercules. Love it. That's for us.
Yeah,
we're we're aging up to millennial, nostalgia porn, and we eating right now.
Okay,
that's why the only thing I've seen the leads of Aladdin in are like the girl was one of Charlie's Angels, right?
Yes,
and the so, guy, yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure.
Once again, Guy Ritchie launching careers. I'm going to tell you, I had zero recollection that he directed the live action Aladdin. Zero. And I feel like I'm someone who's pretty smug about their knowledge of what directors do when. Guy Ritchie's, though, his deep, deep commitment to that ethos of one for them, one for me,
yeah.
is so, he's committed to that. Like, he is deep in the, yeah, what does the studio got? I don't care if it doesn't seem like anything I'd do. I'll do it. But then I'm also going to follow it up with this nonsense British thing that's definitely going to have a lot of violence.
Because between Aladdin and this was The Gentleman, right?
Oh, God, that's right.
The Colin Farrell, yes! Matthew McConaughey weed one with Lady Mary as a sexy mechanic. You know, yeah.
Wow.
Lady Mary is a sexy mechanic. If you gave me that, I'd be like, that's a Guy Ritchie film right there.
Yeah. And frankly, a movie I remember with much more clarity than Aladdin. But, you know, here we are. I thought we had finished with this, but I guess Disney will not rest until we get a live action Home on the Range, you know, with CG cows or something, because they did. I thought we'd stopped. But I guess if Aladdin made money, they're going to keep. They're going to keep on with these, but
Query for you younger fellas. Was Hercules I didn't see it. Was it also a musical?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of singing throughout, and I swear to fucking God, I swear, this is the only thing. Truly a movie that I probably won't be that invested in. If there's only one thing they get right, is that if the ladies of the vase are not black women singing, if they try and stick in Ariana Grande or some shit like that, I will... Not be happy about it.
It's going to just be Lea Michele playing four different characters.
CGI clones.
Actually, because it's Greek mythology, they will all be played by Nana Mouskouri. So you know, that's a bold choice, but I admire them for taking it.
Yes, but yeah, it was. Let me see. The Muses were
the Muses.
Right, yes.
The Muses.
Yes.
And yeah, it was voiced by. I'm gonna get this right. Yes, I did look this up. Lilias White, Venice Y. Thomas, Roz Ryan, and LaShanz.
I'll say I never saw Hercules, but the only thing I know about it are those women, because at least one of them was as thick as my eyebrows.
LaShanz and Lilias White are both Broadway legends, so I'm sure they're going to lean in that direction.
Nice. And Cheryl Freeman too, not to leave Cheryl hanging.
Awesome.
To speak to Hercules, it definitely feels like an underrated one of those, because all the elements are so, it's like gospel singers, and then it's Greek mythology, and then also Jason Alexander is in it. Like, it's just a lot of like randomness, and then
James Woods.
James Woods.
Oh, I want the Ed Wood version.
But it definitely feels, at least in my memory, I haven't watched it since then. I feel like Emperor's New Groove is probably remembered as the most eccentric of one of those, but I feel like Hercules is memorable because it's just kind of weirder than a lot of, or you know, comparatively to other, you know, compared to like Lion King or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it once and haven't thought about it in 25 years, but it seemed a little more vaudeville peppier than, you know, like Lion King or something like that. But it was coming at that moment where, like, after that and Pocahontas and some of the other sort of post-Aladdin ones, I was sort of like, we don't have to do these quite so often, Disney. Maybe we could space them out a little. And I don't know. I kind of tuned out, but then I wasn't 10 years old at the time, so I'm not the target market for this, you know. Speaking of things I'm not the target market for, Gak is still around. Summer has begun, so what better than to start fantasizing about the holidays? Well, some of us never stop. If that's your MO, Gak has you covered with a Christmas movie marathon. They're calling Great American Christmas in July. They'll be showing Christmas movies all day, every day throughout the 4th of July weekend, including previews of a few new films coming this actual Christmas season. Is this important? Does anyone else care?
My favorite, we've absolutely discussed GAC before, and I read this and was like, I don't know what that means. I don't know. I truly was like, is this Hallmark? What am I talking about?
Mine is even worse, because I read that and before I heard the story and thought the toy GAC that Nickelodeon used to sell was coming back.
Too.
And I was litty titty.
That's Greta Gerwig's next project.
Here's the nutshell version. So Bill Abbott is the guy who thought it would be a good idea to take down the ad with the lesbians kissing on Hallmark when the right wing made a big deal about it. Hallmark parent company with the cards was like, no, we're very queer friendly here, and eventually canned him as CEO of Hallmark. He then goes over to GAC, which is this brand new channel being started by a bunch of like OAN Trump pack, like gross right wingers out of Texas. And he's basically repeating his entire Hallmark playbook. He's hired away a bunch of people that he brought to Hallmark, like Danica McKellar, like Candace Cameron Bure, and he's making pretty much the kind of the exact same movies, except they pay the stars more to get them, so the rest of the movies still cost the same, so everything else is really janky. And generally speaking, their first season out, not only were the movies unmemorable, no one watched them. Like, the ratings were like, you had to bring out the decimal points to count the percentage of the audience they were getting. So now they're doing this weekend-long Christmas in July thing, yada-da-da. But the real action, as folks who would know these things know, first of all, Hallmark Movies and Mysteries is doing a full week of Christmas movies that started last night. And then Hallmark proper, Hallmark Channel, is doing Christmas in July. And they're giving us three new Christmas movies in the month of July, one of which is specifically a Christmas in July movie that is set at a summer camp that does a Christmas in July celebration. So that's where the action is. That's where I'll be glued in the month of July. And Gak is just doing whatever it does.
At a summer camp?
Wow.
A Christmas? Did Alonso and I make this motion picture? Amazing.
And I'm very excited, and you know, Dave White is already investing in extra earplugs.
I feel like if they're going to do this, they should really cater to the Southern Hemisphere, you know, because they celebrate, you know, their summer is during Christmas in December. True. So like, let's, you know, surf in Santa and all that kind of stuff.
I feel pretty sure that the Truth Social of Hallmark channels is not going to be interested in what another hemisphere is watching.
Very true.
That's my vibe.
I will say this, like, since Bill Abbott left, Hallmark has gotten a lot more inclusive. You know, you're seeing queer characters in films more and more. You're seeing interracial couples. You're seeing a lot of stuff that never happened under his watch. So, I'm always excited to see what they do next in the realm of Christmas. And they're really delivering in July. So clearly, I'm not the only lunatic that wants to see this stuff in the middle of summer. An entire network is devoting themselves to it. So there are a lot of us out there.
Consider yourself warned.
Yeah, well, I remember when they started Christmas in July running on the ABC Family stuff. Mm. So I actually am a fan of Christmas in July. It's fun, a way to break up, like if you're still using, you know, linear cable or YouTube TV in my case. Like you're just kind of bored and looking for something. A Christmas movie, it always hits the spot. It's like that bag of chips, tortilla chips. You know, it doesn't get stale like other chips. It still stays pretty
Quit
crunchy.
Flirting with Alonzo.
And
I don't know why, instead of making everybody sweat in August in Vancouver with the fake snow, why aren't they shooting in Canberra and Melbourne where there might actually be snow happening? I don't know.
Well, you know,
questions for the ages.
Time will tell. Yes.
Speaking of movies,
TM.
Movie Go service expands to Los Angeles, allowing streaming subscribers to see certain indies in cinemas. Last year, the movie streaming service, which offers cinephiles $11 subscriptions to its indie film library, rolled out a program in New York that would allow subscribers to see a different film each week in theaters. As of last week, the program has also been expanded to Los Angeles, with the first chosen film being Cha-Cha Real Smooth, Sundance, a movie otherwise only available via Apple TV+. Angelenos could see the film in various independent cinemas around the city. Is this important? Do you care?
I do think it's interesting that Mubi is the one streaming service that is still trying to keep a foot into the theatrical experience. Like, yes, Netflix movies will get some kind of opening sometimes, usually for awards reasons. But this Mubi Go program is very much like, hey, yes, come stream our stuff. Also, we encourage you to go out and leave your house and see this movie in a theater with other people. So, you know, that's been a mix of things that we haven't been seeing from pretty much any of the other major streamers, even the ones that are super sort of cineast focused, like, you know, Criterion Channel or Ovid or Film Movement. So, you know, I think this is a in a crowded field, it's a way for them to register as a unique experience.
I know they have a few more cities lined up. I'm very excited about this. It's, you know, indie films have been hit by the box office depletion in ways that big ass movies like the one we're talking today. It's a whole different thing you're fighting, and they're not doing well. Spoiler alert for my staff pick, but there's been great indies coming out recently that have not been getting eyes on them, and it is very difficult to stand out when you are up against $1 billion marketing. So Mubi Go, it's also interesting. Their platform also works this way. There's such a curatorial element to it of they're just choosing. It's not, oh, come to the Mubi Go theater. It's, we're putting our attention, we're directing you in this one way on this one movie. And I know they have a couple more cities planned, and I would love for that to get further, because a lot of indies don't even get a theatrical, let alone, like, Cha-Cha Real Smooth was a big sale out of Sundance, and it is, Apple Plus does not show that way. So I like this. They also have, like, movie of the day, a film that I produced was Movie of the Day on Mubi once, and it was such a thrill for me. So they do a lot to really try and specify and target their audiences rather than the broad, welcome to Netflix. Here's the 8 million things you could have to choose from. Please scroll past them for 20 minutes in frustration as you decide nothing's worth watching.
Well, yeah, I love this idea. I'm curious if, like, if they're going to make it a subscription thing, because it would be really fun to just, like, if you're, you know, subscribed to Mubi, then you can just go see whatever they're going to show. Because I feel like at that point, it almost feels like a book club or something.
That is
like,
what it is.
You're going to... Oh,
included.
Awesome. That's really
so
cool.
It's like they have an $11 per month subscription, the same as like any other sort of streaming, but this is part of it. Of course, they are only in two cities for this component, but yeah, right now it's included in that.
That's really cool, because that feels like something, you know, you could build a community around kind of thing. Like all, you know, I think about any of the theaters in LA where it was like you end up seeing like the same people, you know, anybody seeing Miyazaki films or, you know, just whatever, like whatever small indie movie is playing or something, you know, I always love that. And it's like, it is a shame where we think we only spend because movies are more expensive. We're spending so much money. Like, of course, I'm going to go see all the Marvel movies or whatever. But like, I can't remember which film. I mean, Everything Everywhere at Once, obviously, like seeing that in the theater. I'm so thankful I saw that in that space, because I feel like, I mean, I'm going to be happy to watch it at home, but I'm just thankful that I saw it in a theater.
Yeah. I do find it very important because, you know, like you said, you know, Cha-Cha Real Smooth is, you know, bought up by Apple Plus. And I think, you know, that's always the, like, you know, with the state of the box office right now, it's going to be the better go to sell to a streamer. But now we're living in an age where, like, it's like, you know, I have it, you know, because I'm a guy who gets paid to talk about media all the time. But like, how many people have Apple Plus? So I think things like Mubi Go is going to be an opportunity for folks who don't want to shell out a subscription for another streamer to actually not only go see these, but to be able to see this in, you know, what I perceive as the intended cinematic experience. I think, you know, most filmmakers would like their films to be seen in a theater.
They would. If you get bonus points because you actually said this is important, and we so rarely answer the question. I'm very proud of you, Guy.
Thank you. I'm trying to lead by example. But yeah, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to be feeling the power of Jurassic World Dominion.
Soylent, the original food tech company, makes delicious and nutritious nutrition products in convenient formats.
Yeah, especially like the complete protein, which is probably my fave and most drunk Soylent. Is that a thing? Most drunk? Because that's
consumed,
what I'm doing.
Might be better.
Most digested. It's a deliciously rich and creamy plant-based high-protein nutrition shakes with 30 grams of complete plant-based protein, 39 essential nutrients, and 0 grams of total sugars. This unique, well-balanced shake also provides 5 grams of branched-chain amino acids and 1,000 milligrams of omega-3 healthy fats. Satisfy your protein needs without sacrificing nutrition or taste. That's why I crank it right after I get home from the gym or from flying to an island to go try and save some dinosaurs, maybe take some locust DNA.
Go to Soylent.com/MaxFilm and use promo code MaxFilm to get 20% off your first order. That's Soylent.com/MaxFilm and promo code MaxFilm for 20% off your first order.
Look, we've all heard microdosing from either from the internet, a friend, or someone at a party. And look, check it out. All sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better.
Yeah, I have to say, as somebody who's not like a super user of edibles and different products like that, and I don't have a lot of tolerance, and I'm really not looking to get, like, you know, wild and crazy on all this, I find the microdose gummies are really helpful to sort of like take the edge off a little bit. Sometimes, you know, they're really good at kind of helping me focus and concentrate, and I can actually get stuff done. Other times, it's just a nice way to sort of, like, you know, make me less hyped up and tense that I might have been during the day, and sort of ready to kind of face the evening and chill out and you know, eventually get myself into a nice sleeping place. So yeah, these are the right amount of THC, the right amount of the stuff that you want to kind of put you into a good place, and not taking you too far in any direction.
Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code MAXFILM to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that's microdose.com, code MAXFILM.
Now let's get back to the show. Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Evie Whitey Way. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Stephen Ray Morris.
Alonzo Duraldi.
The original Jurassic Park premiered in 1993. And now, almost 30 years later, the sixth movie in the Dino franchise is in theaters. We took a visit to this new Jurassic World and lived to tell the tale. Drea, could you give us a brief synopsis of Jurassic World Dominion?
All right. So... in the larger history of, as Iffy just said, we have our original grouping, which is your Laura Dern, your Jeff Goldblum, your Sam Neill, and then you have your newer Bryce Dallas Howard, Chris Pratt. And this is the movie where they bring them together. They're bringing them together in a way that our OG Jurassic Parkies are trying to track down enormous locusts that are sucking up the global food supply. And then the newer team is trying to find their daughter who has been kidnapped. And she, of course, is a clone from the island. And this is all happening and bringing them all to one place with a very Elon Musk-y dude who is our bad guy. And while this is happening, of course, dinosaurs in the last movie released into the world. So they are fleeing them at every corner. And those locusts I brought up before were enhanced with dinotism, I believe is the scientific term. So yes, it's all coming. They all end up back in this new place, a valley of dinosaurs and problems.
More dinos, more problems.
Yes, more dinos, always, more problems. Always. Sorry. And then I meant to end on Jurassic World Dominion.
Thank you.
I guess I'm going to kick this off with a question that, you know, based on everything I know about Steven, is only for Alonzo and Drea, which is going into this, did you remember what happened in the last Jurassic World?
I remembered an auction in a house and that they all got released at the end. And that was it. So when Clone Girl pops up, I'm like, who's this again?
I didn't remember the Clone Girl. So I couldn't recollect if she was introduced in the previous one. I remembered the last one large for two reasons. One, because this like a major central premise is it is it's like a haunted house, but it's haunted because the dinosaurs are in it. And I'm all for that nonsense. And then also, there was a devastating moment in that because it's set up like the dinosaurs are brought to this enormous castle, house, whatever, because the island they were living on is on fire. And then you see like a dinosaur that's like left behind as this boat goes away and the island goes up in flames. And it really was a problem for me to watch that. My heart felt it. So.
Did you not go to doesthedinosaurdie.com first before seeing the movie?
I did it. I should have, Alonzo, and I'm glad you brought that up for future viewings.
See, I really love that moment in Fallen Kingdom because when I was watching, I was like turning and I was just seeing like everyday moms and dads crying over dinosaurs. And I was like, thank God everyone is now in my place. How I emotionally feel when I think about dinosaurs. I felt like everyone was on my level for that movie. So,
well, you know, I think this is going to segue into a general question that I have for Steven that I think, you know, will help the audience, me and everyone just get to know you as a whole. Would you say you are a fan of the Jurassic Park series or a fan of dinosaurs in general?
Well, I think for a lot of people our age, especially, it really kind of goes hand in hand. It's almost like when if you were born in the late 80s to early 90s, you were handed a dinosaur book when you popped out of the womb, you know, a dinosaur dictionary. And it just so happened that, you know, at that peak age of like six, when I was six when Jurassic Park came out, it was just like it was just the perfect age to be spellbound by that the original Jurassic Park. And I think it also for a lot of people, it not only made you either want to be a scientist, it also made you want to be a movie maker, because I feel like the original Jurassic Park was also so groundbreaking as like as a thing of making movies. So it was a, it like worked on a couple different levels for a lot of people.
But you also know a shocking amount about dinosaurs, because I had you in my brain. This one, you also, of course, get a narrative thread of the T-Rex and then like a gigabyte or like some other, the biggest carnivore in the world. Basically, there's a showdown between the two apex predator things. And my, I don't know what the version is of the word Luddite for someone who can't tell dinosaurs apart, but that became my eyes. And I was like, I bet Steven knows how many teeth that dinosaur is supposed to have. And I can't figure out which one's the T-Rex. So sad.
70. No. well, but see, I have a theory though that most of the good Jurassic Park sequels, because the original Jurassic Park also had an edutainment quality to it to some extent. And I think why this movie worked for me a lot was because everyone actually says the dinosaur names out loud, which like seems a little silly, but I actually think it makes it like, you're like, oh, that one's the Giganotosaurus. That one's the Quetzalcoatlus or what, you know, it's like it that like the first Jurassic Park was so much like everyone's like literally pointing at the dinosaurs and saying their names. So I feel like, I don't know, there's kind of like a childlike joy in that of like, it, they're not just monsters, you know, it's like, oh, we're like learning about something too. It was kind of, this one felt refreshing because I feel like a couple of the ones in between kind of forgot to do that.
Did you guys see all of the ones in between?
I did. Okay. Yeah. Which my question in all this is, taking what's the first Colin Trevorrow movie, the time travel-y one with
Safety Not Guaranteed.
Take Safety Not Guaranteed off the table. Can we agree that Colin Trevorrow is a terrible filmmaker? Just like doesn't know how to create characters or tell a story or even like put together sequences in a way that is compelling or exciting? Because I look at the first World and this one and I just think that it's a movie about people and dinosaurs. Like that should be half the job right there. You have this incredible premise to work with. Like somebody said on Twitter, given how much they've been able to squeeze out of, you know, people who drive fast and steal DVD players, how are we not getting more mileage out of people sharing the planet with dinosaurs?
It's tricky. I know what you're saying because there were elements in this one where I was so on board. Like there's this, but it was like one-off set pieces. Like there's this beautiful moment where Bryce Dallas Howard has been like fallen from the sky and to flee a dinosaur on land. Like she knows to like slither across the ground. It's one long tracking shot and it's her going into this pool of disgusting algae water. And I was like, no, you're going to smell like that for the rest of your life. I've been in that water myself. But it's like this long shot and it's so, and then she ends up sinking under, like, so there's these set pieces that give me that like build up, right? But I do agree with you that there was something lacking when it came to the overall, just the bringing all of those pieces together. And part of it for me was, I like, and this might be my age as well, or like being such a fan of the original, I love the Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, Sam Neill trio so much that I was like, Chris Pratt somehow has turned into a vacuum of charisma in this.
Oh, yeah. Like, no, look, Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard have never been interesting in these movies. And then to put them next to the actual characters we got from the original Jurassic Park, they practically just disappear. I mean, they into like a cloud of fart dust. Like there's nothing. Chris Pratt spends 80% of the movie doing the stupid thing with the hand, which becomes a drinking game by the end of the film.
Yeah.
DaWanda Wise, who we've never seen before in this franchise, like wipes them off map, let alone like the original trio. So yeah, like if I were Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt, like I would have just called in sick because they just come off as non-entities.
Well, and I don't understand why you cast Chris Pratt in this as if he is only the beefcakey hero. Like, you know that guy's funny. Give him a few funny things. Give him something witty to say. Give him some cheeky. DaWanda Wise, of course, plays Indiana Jones in this, and she's amazing. She's like this, she's a pilot, and she, you know, flies smuggled stuff around, and then, oh, her heart hurts, so she ends up, like, helping them out, and she is so fun and so sad, but I was like, Clearly you can write some snark. Give that guy at least a funny thing to say. My God. Like,
I think his thought is, I get to be funny in Guardians. In this one, I'm just like the square jawed stiff. And because that's what he's giving us, you know.
Well, and I like these movies, but I ultimately think that he was miscast. I almost feel like Jason Clarke or somebody would have been a better, you know, he's a little bit more eccentric. I feel like he would have fit Bryce Dallas Howard a little bit better. And it's interesting that, like, as this specific trilogy has gone on, they're both Bryce and Chris Pratt's characters have kind of more diminished as far as, like, they're the most compelling in that area is the little girl, is Isabella Sermon. Like, her, like, they clearly, it just makes me wonder if they had started, like, maybe they had focused on her, like, what is a human clone in a world of dinosaurs? Like, if they had focused that on that from the beginning, I almost wonder if that would have been more compelling than, like, two people who work at the park who, like, kind of hate their job.
Right.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head where when, like, I think this movie just made it more clear where there's just much more exciting characters that you, I think the most exciting thing for me is the fact that, like, you know, that is an archetype that we saw with DeWanda Wise. Like, that is the smuggler, smarmy, like you said, Han Solo, Indiana Jones type. And you never get to see a black woman in that role. And I think she, like, killed it. And it made me excited to see, like, what's her movie? Like, what I want to see what she is up to. And I think, like, you know, kudos to, like, the flavor they added to where there was just, like, some authentic blackness I felt going on. And there's a look that she has with Mamadou at the end where it was, like, very much like they didn't want to go too hard and have him do the black head nod, but there was a look that was like, yeah, they're like, like, yeah, these white people, right? Yeah, let's get out of here.
And he was fantastic. Mamadou Athi. Oh.
Yes.
I love him so. I've loved him since Patty Cakes, which a movie that will forever have a soft spot in my heart. He has the most incredible voice I've ever heard. And he was also underwritten. And yet, even for someone who has relatively minimal screen time, he's trying to do scene, like, heavy lifting because the writing's not there. So, like, he has, like, one stare down with Campbell Scott. And you're like, oh, I wish this guy had gotten a whole thing. But he also is like, you're not going to give me a whole thing, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to give you the best that I can.
If I can be iffy for a moment, he's an NPC in this movie. Yeah. He is there to move the plot forward and has nothing interesting to do. But this guy is so charismatic. He's acting the shit out of it anyway.
He really does.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, even in a perfectly balanced movie, like, that is the guy you'd want in that role where, like, it's one of those things where they don't do enough with him, but you're very pleased at all the times you've seen him. And with a stacked cast like this, you're like, you killed what you needed to kill. You did it. But then like we said, there felt like there was an imbalance. Also it did, like, something we didn't get to talk to, but I want to touch on before we, you know, vote, is just the fan service levels of this movie. Like, they're like, we're going to do all the things, like the T-Rex head going, like, once in I
the
saw circle. The T-Rex,
oh, yeah, the logo. And I saw, oh, the my circle, God.
I was like, oh, they're about to do the logo thing, aren't they? Sure enough.
But I'm a sucker. Like, even that. Oh, yeah, no, moment,
I loved it.
You know what it is? It's because I was like, oh, I like that first one so much. Do as many nods as you want. And also at that point, I had been getting the same chemistry, the same energy from my original three, like, over and over again. So I was like, just redo it. I'm happy. The moments I'm happiest in this movie are the moments where you're just like, let's press those exact buttons we've pressed. Like, I should not have been laughing at Jeff Goldblum's, like, just random, like, getting on a walkie-talkie and being snarky ass. I did. Like, I loved the women having to go down and, like, which button to push. Those are the things. I was like, yes, be redundant. Or be repetitive? What's the word I'm looking for? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but and the thing is, like, I think there's a version of this movie that it just exists as a legacy sequel to the first Jurassic Park that doesn't have the Jurassic World stuff at all. Like, take out Bryce Dallas Howard, take out Chris Pratt, take out the clone, and if you you've still got the stupid locust plot, which is ridiculous, but whatever, we'll take it. And it, that's the excuse to get the old band back together and, you know, into the mountains in Italy. And it's not necessarily a better movie, but it's this movie, the first two thirds is like this whiplash inducing. Meanwhile, like they're just jumping back and forth between the two people who are headed toward the same place. And in the case of Pratt and Howard, like, who cares?
Well, and it's interesting where it's like the last movie, the sort of inciting incident is the volcano just one day explodes. And it's like, you didn't even need Jurassic World. It could, like, whoever, you know, maybe not Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, but anybody could be like, the original Jurassic Park, there's a volcano, you know, the dinosaurs are still there. Like, you could have started off this new thing with that. And then maybe like, cause you know, that's the thing. I think a lot of people are very like, we want to see dinosaurs across the world. And even this movie is a little bit more focused and not as widespread. It's like, it's almost funny that they like were kind of afraid to get off the island. And then it's almost, you could have spent more time. Yeah.
You get a 3-minute news segment at the beginning of the film, sort of showing you what does that world even look like. And it's actually one of the wittier things I've seen in any of these movies since the first one. And then we just walk away from that. And we spend the rest of the movie in these isolated mountain locations or on the island of Malta or whatever. And it's like, but you promised me a Jurassic World. I want a world, you know?
That's the next trilogy.
Oh, please, no.
Yeah. In defense of the locusts, a sentence I don't get to say enough, I do think there is something like you had to tie your bad guy. Like, they've already been released. Like, oh, what are you going to release them into? No, they're out there. They're, like, on the interstate next to your Prius or whatever. For, like, what the real world implications, I was like, well, yeah, I'm never not going to nod when you're telling me that some billionaire white dude has decided to weaponize new technology for selfish means. I'm going to be like, yeah, I got it. Oh, yeah, no, I believe that. I'm in. Got it.
And here's the thing, though. I think if this movie hadn't been so cluttered with all the different franchise characters that had to be in there, that plot line could have evolved in a way where, like, legwork had to be done, and maybe there'd be some twist or somebody would betray somebody. But no, it's like Laura Dern immediately figures it out. We know immediately that he's a bad guy. And then it's just a thing of, like, step, step, step. And there's never a moment where anybody is misdirected in this movie. It's, everybody's just too busy being flagged onto the next set piece. Mm. And so the plot is like, it's like it's not even linear. It's a flat circle. I don't even know what it is.
I actually knew before I got there because I saw that Campbell Scott was in the cast. So yeah,
boom. Oh, might as well cast Tony Houston. You know,
the bad guy.
And it's interesting that this movie doesn't ever acknowledge the fact that Campbell Scott's character was played by another actor in the original Jurassic Park.
Right.
And like, it's the kind of thing that they wrote, like, I don't know how you would write yourself out of this because nobody knew that he hired Nedry to take down the original or like, you know, to steal the embryos. But it almost like it feels like a missed opportunity that like Malcolm doesn't say and like you and he's the one who like originally, you know, like there was no
Wayne Knight in the original.
No.
I forget what the other actor's name.
The guy that Wayne Knight is. That's why he's got the Barbasol can when he's fleeing.
I recognize the Barbasol. Okay.
He's the Dotson. We got Dotson here. But that guy's in prison for being a pedophile or something.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I guess. Oh. He was on a veil. Yeah.
He was.
Christopher Plummer died.
But it's like you don't. It almost feels like I think that would have been a nice thing to like really make it clear, you know, to tie everything together. Yeah, but sure. It's like they kind of. I mean, like, how do you write that in a way? I don't know. How do you write around that? But I mean, I'm sure they could have figured out a way.
Maybe they just needed a bigger budget.
Just needed a bigger budget. Let's go ahead. Let's put on the vote.
Vote.
I am somewhere between a stream it and a skip it. I found most of this movie really negligible, except for the Laura Dern of it all, frankly. Like, that was a lot of fun. And not to be a gay cliche, but, you know, she's always good in these things. And, I mean, like, Goldblum and Sam Neill were fun, but they were kind of coasting on, you know, their usual shtick in these movies, which is, you know, I would have liked to see them kick it up a notch. But holy crap, the filmmaking is so bad. BD Wong gives the same explanatory speech three times in this movie, and there's so many characters that by the end of it, literally nine people are squeezing their way into the last helicopter out. So please, no more of these movies, I beg you. Dinosaurs are great, but the Jurassic movies generally suck.
I misstream it. It was, which is tricky because the one of my favorite parts are the visuals. Like, I may not know the names of the dinosaurs, but I still delight in seeing them. And I could have scooted around with them, like you were saying, in different real world scenarios and been very fine, just like as if I was watching a YouTube level of production. I did think, I said that the return of the OG three very much worked for me, but, and I liked the two new characters, but also their addition told me there's zero stakes because I was like, well, they're not going to kill any of the main stars and certainly not either of the two new black people because not even Universal wants
to. We're not doing that anymore.
Thank you. So, yes. So I wanted it to be better, but it was still better than I expected. How's that?
Yeah. Well, what about you, Steven?
Well, I will say that to me, what really worked for me, Alonzo, like you said, is the Laura Dern of it all. Because in, you know, after the original Jurassic Park, we got Lost World, which was Jeff Goldblum's solo movie. We got Jurassic Park 3, which was Sam Neill's solo movie. And we were forever left with no Ellie Sattler, Laura Dern movie. So for the fact that they are not marketing it as that is insane to me. Because, like, that's what you lead with. Like, this is Laura Dern's Jurassic Park sequel. And I think for that, and I think because I think it has a lot of ambition, even if it's not always succeeding on that level. I think it's at least trying a little bit more than the other sequels. So for that, I'm going to say stream it.
Mm. Well, yeah, I'm going to be a stream it as well. You know, like this will be a great one to just jam on the couch, you know, after you jam through maybe a couple of Lumi gummies, make sure you use Max Film at checkout, and just, you know, jam on with these big old dinosaurs, especially the one with the long nails. It reminded me of Lady D from Resident Evil slash.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we got some more show for you, so stick around.
Manners. Noun. Definition. Rules of etiquette designed not to judge others, but rather to guide ourselves through everyday social situations.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
Every week on Schmanners, we take a look at a topic that has to do with society or manners. We talk about the history of it. We take a look at how it applies to everyday life. And we take some of your questions. And sometimes we do a biography about a really cool person that had an impact on how we view etiquette. So join us every Friday and listen to Schmanners on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Manners, schmanners. Get it?
A man goes to the doctor and says that he's depressed and that life seems cruel. The doctor says, "Ah, the treatment is simple. The great clown Pagliacci is in town tonight. Go and see him and you will surely feel better." The man bursts into tears and says, "But doctor, I am Pagliacci." "Ah, okay," says the doctor. "In which case, try listening to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast." The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is a multi-award-winning comedy podcast, and you can find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm Yosef Uwadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Stephen Ray Morris,
Drea Clark.
And look, there are moments in Jurassic World Dominion that feel a little bit like Indiana Jones with dinosaurs, Star Wars with dinosaurs, Mission Impossible with dinosaurs, even True Grit with dinosaurs. So today we pose the following question: what classic film would you like to add some dinosaurs to? And how would the dinosaurs fit into the story?
Okay, I had something very specific come to mind, and I realized there's a very basic element to this because there's a dinosaur already, sort of, in a way. But my movie was 1938's Bringing Up Baby. Because Cary Grant plays a paleontologist in the, like, one of the things the whole time he's looking for, he's rebuilding a brontosaurus, and he has the entire thing, like, the whole skeleton, except for, like, the collarbone, like a single bone.
Or femur or something.
Yeah, that he's trying to get. It has like a really specific name to it that I don't remember. And then, of course, Katharine Hepburn is this amazing, like, wealthy, insane woman who's like, oh, I have to go get my leopard named baby. It's hijinks, and she like comes and disrupts his life, and it's that madcap. It's the epitome of the sort of madcap screwball comedy, right? And at the end of it, his whole thing is like, oh, what? Forget it. Who cares that I'm like an esteemable scientist? I'll just let this insane woman rule my life. And I have always appreciated that as a takeaway. But my idea was, because there are these things, there's also a mix-up because there's two leopards. So there's the trained leopard that she's looking for, and then there's, of course, one that's escaped from the zoo on this very day, which is the one they run into. So the dangerous leopard, not the trained leopard. Anyway, in my head, I see a version of bringing up baby where those things kind of get conflated, and the brontosaurus is, of course, alive. But there is like a mix up with another more dangerous. Well, I guess you can tell brontosauri apart. But, you know, I'm still workshopping it. But it's still that. It's still hijinks. It's people falling in love because they're pushed out of their comfort zones to discover something deeper about themselves and what the other person can bring out of them. And wonderful clothing. It's fabulous. Bringing up baby. Bringing up Dino. I mean, it's right there.
Yes. Or no, bringing up baby, the secret of the lost legend.
Okay, I'll take it. Dibs.
For the four people in the audience that got that joke, thank you.
Mine's will be Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. But in this version, you know, there's a giant T-Rex on the loose, and they've been trying to like train. There's been a tournament to find who will fight this giant T-Rex.
Stop it.
But you know, not paying attention to the science equipment, of course, a toddler is blown up, and we get to see this toddler throw a tantrum.
Iffy.
And this tantrum kicks a T-Rex's ass.
Iffy. So good. I mean, beautiful. Just touched by an angel you were.
Yeah, you know?
Also, like, what's sad is I could see that, and I feel like I could sell that pitch.
Like, I was going to say, I'm sure one of the versions of the notes at Disney were like, what if it was a dinosaur?
Yeah. I do like the element that it's having a tantrum as well. That really sells it for me. How does this toddler know how to fight? Well, he's hangry.
Yeah.
And he needs a nap.
There's not a titty big enough for this toddler.
Squeezing the
most horrifying poster I've ever heard of.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's the tagline.
Oh, no.
Yep, all right, you're on the marketing
team. That'll be right under the quote from Alonzo that's like, surprisingly good.
I guess this is surprising. A movie.
I guess they made this, and you can watch it. Alonzo Duralde.
Like Drea, I also reached back into the classics, and I was thinking about a 1941 film about a character who has perhaps more money than sense and would do something along the lines of what Richard Attenborough does in the original movie, and that would be Citizen Kane.
Yes.
And when he builds Xanadu in Florida, not only does he have a private zoo, but he also has reconstructed dinosaur DNA.
Yep.
And then he finds out that dinosaurs can read, so he starts publishing tabloids that are aimed at the dinosaur population and revitalizes his media empire.
I can absolutely see that version of it, which is the best part of any pitch. I feel like it's Charles Foster, right? Charles Foster Kane.
Yeah.
Charles Foster Kane the whole time was like Rosebud, but also I should have made a dinosaur. I should have.
Well, it's a toy. It's like a it's a brontosaurus toy, and that's the, you know, it falls off the bed at the end, and then
his last word is Gertie.
Gertie.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Bring us home, Stephen. What you got?
Yeah. Well, in 1993, there was another classic film starring Sam Neill, Jane Campion's The Piano. And I say, you just make it another sequel to Jurassic Park. Ooh, Sam Neill, you know,
his ancestor?
Sam Neill. Yeah, has they, or you just, you know, put it in modern day, and he's, you know, after the events of Jurassic Park, he moves to New Zealand, finds a wife, but then he's has to go toe to toe with a velociraptor played by Harvey Keitel over the affections of one Holly Hunter.
A velociraptor with a sweet booty.
Yeah. The specificity of it being played by Harvey still is like really what ups the ante there. I'm also still picturing all of the same visuals, like, oh,
yes.
The piano washed onto the beach.
The beach.
Yeah. The weird, like, the
Anna Paquin clutching to her dress.
Yes, like all of that. The, like, falling into the water. Oh, and a T-Rex played by Harvey Keitel.
But it makes sense. You know, it's like, it's, you know, feeding off of, you know, Alan Grant's fears of being, you know, like, cucked by a dinosaur, basically. So
Alan Grant's truest of fears, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure if we looked at nightmare. The story Bible. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What I'm discovering here, shockingly easy to insert a dinosaur into a movie.
Pretty much.
Whatever
the genre, I think it's, you know, there's a dinosaur-shaped hole in it waiting to be filled.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like, you know, there's no excuse to not have a dinosaur in your movie.
So, what are you doing?
Yeah. Well, I know what we're doing. Giving out staff picks. It's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Who wants to start?
Oh, me. So Javier Fuentes León is very talented Peruvian filmmaker. I know him through Outfest. He developed his first screenplay, Contra Corriente, through the Outfest Screenwriter Lab, and he went on to direct that movie, which became the Peruvian Oscar entry that year. And he's gone on to make other terrific films. And his latest, The Best Families, Las Mejores Familias, is now streaming on HBO Max. It's a very funny farce about two rich families sort of locked in competition over, you know, land and gossip and other stuff. There's definitely more than a bit of a queer flavor to it, but it is very farcical and very smart and very funny, and it's now very accessible. So after you watch the deservedly acclaimed Father of the Bride remake on HBO Max, which also has a very specific Latin flavor to it, check out The Best Families, Las Mejores Familias from Javier Fuentes León. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. As I dropped at the beginning, indie films in the theater need your love and support. If you are someone comfortable going to theaters, or if you, like me, go to the 1 p.m. matinee, you know, even those work. So briefly, Marcel, the show with the shoes on is adorable and all you could want. If you've seen the trailer, it was a South by Southwest film. It's Jenny Slate. Voices this. Kirsten Lepore is the animation director, and I love her so much. And anyway, support that. But the main one is actually a Welsh film that was at Sundance this year that I loved so much, that was snapped up by Focus, called Brian and Charles. It is so endearing and so lovely. And if you get a chance to see it, please do. I promise you'll be happy. Brian is this like lonely older inventor in like the wild of Wales, who like builds all these sort of unconventional mechanisms, and they're kind of crap, but he finally decides to make a robot who's his best friend named Charles, that's mostly like out of a washing machine. And Charles like learns English by reading the dictionary, and it is so sweet and so funny and so like, ugh, lovely. Brian and Charles, please support your local independents.
Yeah,
I mean local if you can see it.
I was going to be shocked if your pick was going to be Marcel the Shell, because that premiered at Telluride, madam, and not at Sundance.
So. Oh, sorry.
Didn't want you to be off brand, but okay, you brought it home. You saved it.
I didn't claim that it was a South by screening. I thought it premiered there, but yeah, Telluride. But Brian and Charles, yes, Sundance, yes Sundance.
Yes, yes.
Well, you reminded me, Alonzo, because I ended up going to the Academy Museum three times to go to that Miyazaki exhibit. Oh. It was such a delightful space to be in. And Miyazaki is probably my favorite filmmaker. And I went back and rewatched Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind, which was his first, like, it was pre-Studio Ghibli, but it's like kind of considered the first Studio Ghibli movie. Yeah. And rewatching it, it is so like, I don't want to say punk rock, but it's so just like it. I feel like he's like as he got older, he got more calm and steadied. And this film is just has such a raging spirit that I like. I feel like, I mean, I literally have a print of a poster in front of me right now of Nausicaa. I think it's like there's no heroine or hero in a movie like her. And it's just so fun to watch this person just rage out and want to save the world. It's really cool.
That's a great choice.
Nice.
You did it.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Yes, indeed.
Iffy.
Oh, well, mine, you know, I'm going to keep him with the connective tissue. So I went with another DeWanda Wise film. You know, one that, you know, I'm, spoiler alert, going to attach because a friend is in, my buddy Anthony Carrigan. And that's going to be Fatherhood on Netflix with one Kevin Hart plays the rebound. Love, not rebound, post
He's widowed, right?
Love injury. Yeah, yeah. So you could see her do it in there and see my boy Anthony and Watchmen Barry. Good friend, good actor. And that's it.
Yeah.
And while you're on Netflix, DeWanda Wise was Nola Darling in the series of She's Gotta Have It.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Shut up. Really? Yeah. Oh, I could see that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to see everything she's yes. in now.
She's fantastic. Yes.
Well, we started you off with two, Stephen. While I got you on the line, I want to thank you for joining us. Is there anything that you'd like to plug? Where can people find you?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, first of all, it was such a joy to join you and chat and everything like that. And, yeah, everyone can just find me on Twitter at Stephen Ray Morris and see Jurassic Right. Not only do we just talk about Jurassic Park, but basically anything related to dinosaurs. I've had paleontologists on. I've had anybody who has a weird specific interest. There's a great indie musician, Ruby Fields, who lives in Australia, speaking of the Southern Hemisphere. And she's also obsessed with the Jurassic Park and dinosaurs. And that was an episode that I really loved. So I will put that one out there to check out because she's really awesome and her music is great. And we mostly just talked about dinosaurs. So
Stephen is a fantastic Twitter follow. And he also nicely fulfills the most important niche in my life, which is regularly puts up cat pictures or forwards other people. Not forwards. I'm a Nana. You know what I'm saying? Retweets. Damn it.
You know, she's got to fill some positivity. Forwarding those tweets on your timeline. Good girl, job, Dan.
And then I took a picture of my phone so that I can show it.
I know. I live in this head.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dre and Alonzo, thank you to both of you for once again riding in this plane with me, the cinema plane, that is. And you, listener, thank you for listening. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm. And of course, you can send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is the wonderful, illustrious Marissa Flaxpart, and our senior producer is just as wonderful. It's Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.